Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. Today's guest is Christine Sachs, a Master Certified and Associate Certified Diversity Coach who's committed to creating the change and disrupting the comfortable. She is the creator of the multilingual micro-podcast, I Feel Awful, Chronicles of Leadership, and a coach trainer for the New York and European programs at Accomplishment Coaching. In this conversation, we discuss some of the turning points in her journey, and Christine shares some guidance for coaches and personal development enthusiasts drawing on decades of experience in the industry. Hi, Christine.
Hi, Robert. Awkward.
Yeah, for two people who talk fairly regularly, this is a new exchange of sorts. So I'm so happy to be able to talk with you and to ask you some questions. It's so nice.
Well, hopefully I'm interesting.
Oh, I like to think so.
Yeah, thank you. You're very kind.
I was thinking about how to start. And I'm going to start with something I've heard come from you a couple of times, which is a quote. It's a quote you like.
Okay.
In order to fully love yourself, you can't hate the experiences that created you. And this is something I first heard it from you. And a little background, how I met you is because I took an interest in coaching training through this organization, and you're one of the leaders and facilitators there. So during that training, I remember we were talking about the usual stuff that coach training tend to involve, and you brought this quote up, and it deeply resonated with me. But why does it resonate with you so much?
So it's not my quote. So
correct.
I don't actually know whose it is originally, but it struck a chord with me, because I think one of the things that I think that we as humans do is we demonize the past. Oh, well, I was a bad person then, or I'm different now, or I've gotten, you know, this whole idea that around personal development is that I'll be better, stronger, faster, more compassionate, like just better. It's part of our training, but I think it's also true that regardless of whether or not you like your past experiences, they forge you to who you are. And by demonizing the past, you're implicitly demonizing a portion of who you are. Hmm. And the tapestry that made you the person you are now. You know, I often think about, and I'll just use myself so as to just kind of keep it at home base rather than talk about clients and stuff. But, you know, I think about, I had this friend once who, she couldn't do something with an elevator. And I just said this thing to her about that just was totally diminishing. And it left my mouth before I could even see it. But I need, you know, and then I was like, oh, that was a real, like, she was very kind and she didn't say anything, but it was such a shitty thing for me to say. I mean, like, I condescending, like it was all the things. I could choose to be like, wow, you were such a dick. Hopefully, you know. Yeah, to myself, like, hopefully she never talks about it. Like, hopefully I'll never be reminded of it again. And what's likely true is that I was doing that frequently. This was probably not the first time I had been a condescending asshole to somebody, but I needed to really hear it and get it in order to grow from it. Because if I didn't see it, if I didn't recognize that I'd been doing it, I wouldn't be able to curb the behavior. Cause you know, it's like the blind spot thing. You can't see what's in your blind spot. So you don't address it. Yeah. So do I like that memory? Absolutely not. But do I honor it for what it was, which was a learning experience? Sure.
Hmm. That makes a lot more sense with that example. And kind of playing along with this phrasing a little bit, the sentiment, I'm curious about a little bit of your like origin story and early life. And what were some of the things that to you were really influential as far as your origin story?
So I was abandoned as an infant in South Korea. Some of this I don't remember, obviously, this was told to me, but I was abandoned as an infant, lived in two foster homes as an infant before flying across the world to America at just over 1 year of age to be adopted by a family, a white Caucasian family from Long Island. And then grew up in Long Island, had a very kind of very solidly middle class upbringing, definitely in a white community, very few Black people, very few Asian people. I don't even remember if there were Latinos in my neighborhood, you know. It's mostly white and South Asian, Jewish. And so I think, you know, there's the unconscious memory, the memory of the body from being abandoned, you know, because so there's this whole thing about how I don't have a birthday. It just basically means that because I was abandoned as an infant, they guesstimated based on my height and weight and what my age could be. Oh. And so there's unconscious memory, and then there's conscious memory, where I think, like most people, you know, their parents did the very best they could with some shitty ass tools, you know? So all of those things, while at the time seemed like not great starts to a fulfilling life, you know, again, really to embrace them, to grow through them, has led me to a very particular place that I actually find myself challenged. So I don't know if you do this, Robert, but I pick year long breakthroughs. So I really focus on up leveling every year around a theme. And I noticed that so this year's is joy. And it's not like I can't feel joy, I don't experience joy, but it's really about what's the breakthrough, what's the up level in joy, because last year was an incredible year for me and my family. And I noticed that I ended the year feeling like ass. Like I just felt terrible and I didn't know why. And I think because, you know, when your focus is survival for so long, you think that thriving is the goal, but thriving arrives. And because you haven't actually had the muscle or practice around being happy, you're like, you don't feel the way you, or at least I didn't feel the way I thought I was going to feel when confronted with a great life. And so my focus this year is really looking at what up levels joy, what brings joy, what's that breakthrough, what's that real breakthrough for me? Can I live in the experience of my life versus constantly looking for how to quote unquote better myself?
Right. Now, to go back to some of what you shared about your origin story, I had the same thing because I was thinking like, oh, that's astrologically heartbreaking. But I didn't know my time of birth for the longest time because I only had the documentation that's like the American template birth certificate that was like, this is your name and you're born here. So yeah. It doesn't have like the birth certificate from the hospital with your weight and all of the details and everything. So I had my birth time off for pretty significantly, you know.
Did you find out what it was?
I did, because I reached out to my mom and I was like, do you have like the original Chinese birth certificate? Because she gave me the one that I have that's in English. And I was like, no, I'm interested in the one that would have more details, because I wanted to double check my time of birth. And yeah, it did give me a different sign than what I thought it was, because I think my mom previously was like, I think it was around this time, and it wasn't, you know.
I had a witch tell me my time.
Really?
No, okay. I've never told you this story.
No.
Oh my god. So I'm still on the fence about how much I believe this, but sure. It's entertaining.
Yeah.
So I have a friend who's a professional psychic and tarot card reader, and she's like, I'm going to help you find your birthday. And she had a witch who does scrying as her talent. I don't know how to put it. And so that person landed on a date and a general time, but also had advised my friend that there's a way to call forward muscle memory. So your memories, if you subscribe to this, your muscles have memory that your conscious mind doesn't. And so there is a method where when you hit on something that your muscles remember that you don't, your arm like releases. So you hold your arm out and then somebody pushes down. And then when the unlock happens, the resistance that your arm has from holding up changes. Mm-hmm. And we did it. We went through November and December. We did all sorts of things and nothing seemed to happen. And then I said, well, maybe it's because I started life speaking and listening to Korean. And so we found how to say the numbers phonetically, and then it worked. Uh-huh. Lock was having to do the Korean pronunciation. And so if it's accurate, and so the scrying and the muscle thing came on the same day, just different times.
Ah.
There's like a 2-hour differential, but yeah. And yeah, it's a very different sign, rising sign, whole thing. So.
Well, and you know, I was talking to somebody where they're like, I didn't even consider that to be a privilege, to be able to kind of just, yeah, this is my chart. Like, I can tell you about this part of myself. Right. And for other people, it may not be so simple.
It was so interesting because I did this diversity coach training, and they're like, introduce, and maybe it was because I was surrounded by people of color, primarily Black people. Mm-hmm. And they said, so tell us your name. And I was like, listen to them. And maybe it's because it was, you know, the history of Black Americans, in that they don't have a name. They don't really have a name. They don't know where they're from. And there's a whole genetic history that is lost, and amongst other things. Yeah. I thought they're looking at everybody, introduce themselves by their white names, basically. I was like, oh, I don't have a name. Like, they gave me a name, kind of like how like Adam is the like filler name for abandoned boys at the hospital. They just called him Adam. Mm-hmm. I was given the doctor's name, and it was like, I didn't really get present to the missing that is, that I don't like, I might've had a name, I might not have, but that I don't know it. I have like a, and I've told my name to some Koreans. I'm like, yeah, that's not a name. That's not real. Like, I don't know what that, they like, they can't translate it.
I see.
And what the Koreans who brought me over told my parents the translation was, is not actually what it is.
Okay.
I think they just called, like, I guess I was just a smiley baby, so they had a nickname for me, but they said that the Korean name meant that. And then I asked some actual Koreans, like, yeah, no, that's not what that means. Like, whoops, okay.
A whole other cultural experience about double checking meanings with tattoos and such.
Right.
you know, that's happened to me. Oh, it's so funny listening to your origin story. And then at some point, which is how we met, you've gone through a couple different stages. And it's so funny. I'm pretty sure we have some similarities because you at one point was involved in theater, and mm-hmm. you had a theater company where you were producing for kind of underrepresented voices. And, you know, I went to school for dramatic writing is what they called it, but also did like theater. So mm-hmm. what got you interested in something like theater? And then at some point you transitioned.
Well, let's see if I can remember all the way back. So my motivations back then were less self-aware than I think how I would think about it now. How I think about it now is I was at a time in my life, because I didn't go to school for theater. I mean, I had a job at Columbia, and I'm like, oh, literally, this is what I thought. I could take a business class. That would be really helpful. Or, you know what? I'm going to take an acting class.
Mm.
But I think what I was seeking at the time was self-expression.
Yeah.
You know, because I went, you know, you do as most middle-class Americans or anybody really, like you, well, middle class people who can have the privilege to go to college. You know, you graduate high school, you go to college, and then you get a job. It's not necessarily a lot of room for self-expression there, you know. So I think I was looking for an outlet to find my voice. And then because I'm quite a self-starter, you know, I started in theater late, so the likelihood of my having a professional career as an actress was very small because I didn't have training. I didn't know how to do any of that. So I just wrote my own stuff, which is how I started my own business. Like, that's just kind of, that's how I do, right? There's not a place for me. I will make a place.
So
a friend of mine, actually two friends, we created something to have fun, create new work, and just create a community for people who didn't have a place but who wanted to do something creative.
Mm. Yeah.
And basically, you know, my producing partner and I had decided early on that this would never be the place where we made money, because at that time, you have to think, this is 2003, so it's like 20 years ago. Mm. In order to make money in the arts, your art had to appeal to a certain audience. Yeah. And so we knew that we wanted to be able to create and provide opportunities for people who may not be mainstream. And so we both had day jobs, so this was definitely a passion project. And we agreed early on that it would never be the main focus of where we would make money. So basically, you know, we both kind of got tired of the grind that it is to produce theater and film. We just sort of said, okay, time's up. I got pregnant. She got pregnant. So it was like, we decided to devote our lives to kind of what was coming next, which was families, focus on career and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It was absolutely well worth time spent. I learned so much, and the community and the people that I've met when I was doing it, I would not trade for the world. But it wasn't what I was meant to be doing.
Did you have any particular authors or playwrights or novelists and things like that that really spoke to you even back then?
Well, we did adaptations.
Gotcha.
So we wanted to take classic Western texts and then put a spin on them to see what changed and what was the same if it was viewed through a diverse lens. So like we had a slam poetry version of Medea. Mm-hmm. We had a puppet play, like a play with puppets around, I think it was Perseus. We had a play with music that was an adaptation of Antigone that was set in post-Katrina Louisiana, you know? So it was really now these ideas would have been like highly marketable. Back then it was not. So, but they were great. And, you know, some of our contributing partners have gone on to stay in the arts. A couple of them are quite well known now. So we were able to, there's one who I'm not going to name check, but I think we were her first paying gig out of school.
Mm-hmm.
We commissioned her play for $1,000 and it was amazing. And then she went on to like basically plays and television and all the things. Like, she's amazing.
Maybe you'll tell me the name after the recording stops. So then what drew you initially to, I think I heard somewhere that your entryway to coaching and what this world was through coaching training.
Yeah, it was basically, my entryway was boredom. I mean, it's real. I had this wonderful job working for a prestigious institution and work-life balance was great. Salary was great, but I was bored. I was so bored. And a friend of mine called me bossy. And she's like, you'd be a great coach. You're bossy. I'm like, you know, I gave her that, you know, that face. So I did some research. I didn't even know what coaching was. I always like to make this joke that I'm the only New Yorker that prior to coaching had never had any personal development at all. Never been to therapy, never did Landmark, never had a coach. Not
uh-huh.
a thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, back in the day when I first started, we coached by telephone. Zoom didn't exist. The only game in town was WebEx and Skype. And you only use Skype to call your international friends. And WebEx was only for big companies. So we did all of our coaching by phone. Hilarious. I know people are like, how did you do it? So I was like, well, maybe there's something there. So I did some research and I knew I wanted two things. I wanted it accredited and I wanted it to be, if not all in person, somewhat in person. Because back then, you have to remember, there weren't videos. Like, it was all like phone learning. Like, there was no way that I was going to, like, you know.
If it's not in person, yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, it was just a very different world.
Yeah.
So I found three. Two never wrote me back. And these are big name schools. Like, it was crazy. I was like, if you can't, you don't know the story. I was like, if you can't run your business, you're not going to teach me how to run mine. So I actually chose our program by default. I mean, I did like their questionnaire. It was a very inside out questionnaire. So I really got intuitively kind of where the program was coming from. So I had a free weekend. I had some disposable income. I was like, sure. And 10 and a half years later, here I am.
Do you still experience some common misconceptions about coaching? If so, is there any that you kind of like to kind of settle right away when you're kind of introducing someone or meeting someone who's like, I'm interested, but I don't know anything about ontological coaching or coaching in general?
Right. Yeah. It's not that I like explain it to them. I just make sure they actually want coaching. Some people don't want coaching. And because other coaches don't really explain what coaching is, people are like left thinking they're hiring coaching when they want like a mentor, really, or they want therapy. Mm-hmm. So in fact, I just spoke to someone and she was talking about what she wanted to do. And I'm like, are you sure you want to coach? And then I went through kind of the differences, and she came back to me a week later. It's like, oh, you know what? I really do. I want a consultant. I want a business advisor. I'm like, oh, cool. Good luck. If you ever want coaching, let me know.
Right.
Sort of saves us so much pain and being like, you know, that way, like once we're really clear and making sure that they want coaching, then, you know, all the other stuff we can work through, because coaching is a very, it's a singular experience because most people are not used to having that much agency in their lives.
Yes.
So you have to, as a coach, there is a meeting your client where they're at to sort of guide them through the experience of like, oh no, I'm not going to tell you anything. Like this is your job. Like this is coaching. This is how coaching is different from consulting. And sometimes you have to like be explicit about it, which is how they learn A, to be clients, but also B, how to really evoke that agency in their lives, kind of whether it's professional or personal. But it's a singular experience in that way.
Mm.
You can't really explain it until you're doing it.
I think my first experience, because I had heard of it, but again, I didn't know any of the nuances or what the experience was like, was through observing it. And that was actually a little bit distinctive because it was observing coaching training, but that was sort of my first experience in seeing what is it like to work for someone as a coach. And on top of that,
did you go to an observation?
Yes, in person. This would have been middle of 2019. You know, I thought I was interested and I was just curious about what the world was like. Yeah, without going into too many details, but yeah, it was definitely, I was like, so many emotions, but so much. I was like, I don't understand the way people are communicating with each other right now. Like, I'm not exactly sure what is happening, but I've never heard people talk about themselves so authentically, but also without having to go into like, here's my diary entry, like here's all the nitty gritty. And right. So there is a little bit of transition period for people to sort of get it. And I had that too. And you have talked about, you had a training around like DEI. Well, it's certainly a hot topic now, and I know it's something that is in your world and something you care about. I'm curious how you sense DEI, like what the impact of it is in your world working with teams and clients, and like just, I'm just curious about any thoughts you have about DEI and the direction of it.
That is a broad question, my friend.
Very broad, yeah.
Do you want my opinion about it? Like, you know, because we could get into like DeSantis and Florida, DEI. Right. We could talk about it in coaching. Like,
yeah, I think I'm just for an overall like temperature check for your, like a little bit of just about your personal opinion on how DEI training has gone, its impact, and just like how things are right now.
I am not an explicit DEI trainer, so I don't know that I am the best person to provide that kind of quote unquote expert opinion. Mm-hmm. I will say that when I work with people on a one-to-one basis, there are actually two conversations that I often have with people. One is the, is it racism? Is it sexism? Because sometimes people don't have a distinguished idea. And so they either put too much in the racism, sexism box and don't take enough ownership about like, well, can't be a jerk. Or they don't put enough into the racism, sexism box. And they're like, well, I don't understand why it's not making a difference. And I'm like, well, because they don't let you talk, you know, whatever, right? So I think that when I work with people of color, it's very much looking at, are you clear about the lines and where the boundaries so that you can feel agency and accomplish what you want,
right?
Or the impact that you're trying to have. When it comes to teams, you know, it's a fine line because as a coach, we don't prescribe things. What I often, and it's not always welcome. Like I remember going into a team at a company, we were doing a test run and the women, there were like a room of 10, three women. And I went to the CEO and the COO after. I'm like, do you notice the women didn't say anything? Like, what are you talking about? They spoke up. I'm like, did they? Mm-hmm. And they didn't like it. They didn't want to hear it. And they went with somebody who was more of a cultural fit. So sometimes it's not welcome. You have to really pick your places to make a difference and reflect. Because all, you know, as you know, Robert, all we are is mirrors. And so we're not infallible. We're just, you know, human data point collectors. And so they can do what they want with the data, including get mad at you. but I think that the biggest, you know, I experience my job is if a group, a company, an individual says they have a commitment to certain kinds of inclusion and belonging, and they do not act in accordance to that commitment, it's my job to reflect that. Mm-hmm. I generally don't work with people who don't have those commitments, but I know that they're out there. So, I mean, I think that's the role of coach. And I think that DEI is a much longer, more involved conversation that perhaps needs someone who's got more subject matter expertise on it. I can only talk to my experience of
coaching. So as a coach, there's so much of it when you say we don't prescribe. There's an experience of us having to practice observation without assumptions. So how do you, or how have you practiced observing or noticing and understanding without absorbing everything that's being shared with you? You know how that can happen, especially with people who are, when there can be emotionality in a conversation, especially with in something like this.
I'm old, I'm having short-term memory loss, so that helps. Gosh, you're asking me a thing that I do automatically that I don't know. I don't know if I know how to explain it. I think.
Oh, interesting.
Well, let me think about it in sort of Christine pre-coaching and Christine now.
Okay.
I think my old method was to shut people out and withdraw, or to caretake. Like the main job was to like make somebody feel better. Mm-hmm. I think now I am, through my training and my own personal development, I'm clear that these emotions are happening around me. They're not at me or for me. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of people, but also new coaches, take stuff personally. And so whether the person, my client, succeeds or doesn't succeed, it's not really about me, because I'm not like there with them in every choice point, in every moment of their lives. It's really all them. And so I'm very clear in giving credit, putting the credit over there, as opposed to, oh my God, my life changed because of you. It's like, no, your life changed because of you. I just helped you access the conversation or the thinking or the whatever that changed it. So I guess it's two things. One is I don't necessarily need the validation of my client's wins or feeling better or comfort to say that I'm doing a good job. So I think that helps, number one. And number two, so remember we talked about my parents and having rusty, crappy tools. Mm-hmm. I didn't always have boundaries. I didn't always know what was not mine and what was mine. And so personally developing therapy and coaching around kind of figuring out what's mine and what's not mine, I think has really helped me be able to listen to people without absorbing, because those are my own hard-won boundaries.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. Because I do observe, I see you as someone who's particularly masterful at that. It's a little tidbit for me, a little bit, I guess. So you also do work around, for example, I've taken some of your immersive training experiences around imposter syndrome. So of course that got me curious. What made you decide to have that focus to begin with? And I guess maybe some people don't know what it is. So maybe you can fill in a little bit, but yeah, why imposter syndrome?
Am I going to disappoint you if it's not particularly deep?
No, you won't disappoint me.
Mostly because I thought it was interesting. It would be, you know, almost anything that I take on, I always look for the win-win. Like, what am I going to learn more about? Well, how will this experience grow me? In addition to, some people really create a niche because they want to be an expert in something. That's not been a driver of mine. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of stuff so that I don't get bored. And so I thought, hey, that could be kind of fun. Through the coach training program, I get a lot of work and transformation. In my one-on-one coaching session, it isn't necessarily the primary driver. People want coaching for lots of reasons. Sometimes it's transformation, sometimes it's not. And I felt like, oh, I was missing that experience in my private practice. So let me try to pull together something that could be transformative in my private practice. So I came up with this 3-day immersive thing, and I wanted to play with space and exercises and, you know, kind of just a variety of different things. So you know, imposter syndrome seemed very, it's the catch-all for a whole host of ways people like have misconceptions about themselves. So it's not that I have a particular interest in imposter syndrome. And I also think that imposter syndrome covers a wide range of quote unquote problems or things that people are, obstacles or things that get in people's way. So for one person, it could be they don't give them, you know, there's a needs, they don't give themselves what they need. Another one might be self-confidence. Another one might be people pleasing. They're all very different, but they all live under the umbrella of imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. I picked it because it was a recognizable term. Because I'm sure when you experienced the workshop, it didn't feel necessarily like, oh, we're like tools about imposter syndrome, but it was really like a full-bodied exploration that used imposter syndrome as the on-ramp to kind of look at who you are and how you relate to your environment, your stimuli, yourself in a different way.
Absolutely. I experienced it as fully immersive, but that this is always a place you could come back to be like, is this perhaps a little bit of imposter syndrome? And maybe it is, and maybe it isn't. But yeah, I experience as much more holistic, I guess is the word that's coming up. And within the past few years, you know, many people have talked about how the coaching industry has exploded. There could be many factors for it. So there could be lots of people who are aspiring or newer coaches. Do you have any, I guess, guidance or advice as someone who's had, you know, 12 years of experience or maybe more in this industry for people who are just jumping in?
Get training. In my opinion, it matters where you get the training, but get training, because a lot of people think they know what coaching is, and the lines, like, look, it's not a regulated industry. The lines are blurry. There's so much listening and relationship that happens inside of a successful coaching relationship, contract, whatever, that we don't normally practice in our everyday lives. And I think that that's the universal feedback for anybody who goes through our program, which is like, especially for folks who are in this is their second career, or they think it's like an easy way to make a lot of money. They're mm-hmm. like, I thought I knew how to listen. Like, this is really hard. And not because, like, you know, you have the tools. It's just, there's such a different, there's just a different way to do it that, training really helps you evolve into a coach ear that lives beyond friend ear or human ear.
Awesome. So if someone wanted to connect with you or get in touch with you, perhaps work with you and just check out your space, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Email is best. Christine@ChristineSachsCoaching.com. They could watch a video of me on my website, ChristineSachsCoaching.com. You can go look at photos of me from 4 years ago where I look very mean and stern. I like them, but they are very powerful photos.
Oh, yes. You use an image of like a, what was it, an anvil? Or no, a jackhammer.
Oh, a sledgehammer. Yes. That's not on my website, though. That's just for the podcast.
Well, thank you for taking time to connect with me today in this different way. And I want to respect your time. So thank you for today.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. Listeners are welcome to connect with me over Instagram and LinkedIn. You just have to search my name, and I love to hear from you. If you'd like to learn more about my work as a coach and artist, please visit www.robertkwanghome.com.